time. Hello, and welcome to the Off-Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances. I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 151, the borderline episode. I'm not really on any borderlines, but I have put on my borders, the half-square triangle border, GA, and have three of the four dark blue borders. I thought I'd go ahead and get the podcast all ready to go and then sew on that last border. There's something about having the podcast ready, and all that's keeping me from posting it is having to sew on this one border so I can take a picture, and then you guys can tell me what kind of binding, what color binding I should use. I'm thinking maybe just the same blue as the outer border, but if you have some snazzier ideas than that, let me know. You can come over to my website, which is theoffkilterquilt.wordpress.com, or you can email me at F, as in Francis, Dowell, as in Duell, at nc.rr.com, as in North Carolina Roadrunner.com. So you've got it all spelled out for you. No excuses if you're feeling like emailing me. I would love to hear any feedback on that. I hope you'll be excited to finally see the mosaic quilt. Not done, but the top done. This is big. This is big, girls. This is big. If you contributed fabric and have not confirmed with me that I know, like I heard from Sally, and I remembered that Sally had sent me fabric. I remember that Barbara and Tori and Amy, AJ Deb. Who else? Who am I not remembering? Anyone? Please let me know. I think, Margaret, right? Margaret, you sent some. I feel that you did. I've got a list of people who have let me know. But if you haven't confirmed with me, confirm. I'd like to know that. I may even put something on my label, because, you know, I'm so, like, about labels now. Will has started talking in Valley Girl talk sometimes, and, you know, he claims that there's a girl in his class who talks like that. But I was recess monitor at his school yesterday for his advisory, and I actually sat with the girls because Will, who loves me, who hugs me, who comes and holds my hand sometimes, would not let me sit with him and his friends while they were eating lunch. So I was just sitting in this classroom, at the front of the classroom, twiddling my thumbs. And so I went over to the girls and said, can I sit with you? Total at lunch. These kids at the school, they eat in the classroom. There's no cafeteria. They all have to bring their lunch. Every month there's a hot lunch. So it's just that the people who designed the school decided that cafeterias were problems. Which actually is not a bad word. Cafe interiors. Okay, stop. I will. Cafeterias cause more problems than they solved. So anyway, so the kids eat lunch in a classroom, and in the sixth grade, totally divided boy and girl. It's like the two groups are not even acknowledging each other. Although Will says there are some boys and girls who are starting to kind of have crushes and be boyfriend, girlfriend, and that way you do in sixth grade. So anyway, I went and sat with the girls, got the scoop. And not one of the girls sounded like a Valley Girl. They were all nice, although Will comes, they're all disgusting. They weren't. They were nice. I enjoyed them. So it is Wednesday, November 19th, and here's the things I want to tell you. First of all, I have a question for you. I'm giving you all sorts of ways to comment. Now remember, you don't have to actually listen to the episode to comment, though if you're not listening to the episode, you don't know that I'm giving you permission not to listen to the episode. So that's kind of, a brain puzzler. That's a puzzler. But feel free just to listen to the introduction and just go ahead and comment right now. You don't have to listen to the whole episode. That's good to listen the first 5 minutes. But you can go over to the website, theoffkilterquilt.wordpress.com, and comment on the mosaic quilt. Go, yay, I can't believe it, you finally did it. See, I'm going into that Valley Girl thing. Don't know why. And also say, and here's my suggestion for your binding. Do that. But I have a question for you, because I'm pondering things. You know I like to ponder. Quite sure you're very bored with my pondering. But ponder I do and ponder I will. Who taught you to quilt? Let's refine it. Did your mother quilt? And if she did she teach you? have you learned from her as a quilt maker? Now, because some people don't get taught things by their parents that their parents are doing and love to do, and would love when the kid is a kid to pass on this passion and this interest, and the kid's like, "Yeah, I'm not interested." And then later, I think that happened, you know, with Mary Fonz and Mary Ann Fonz, that Mary Fonz did not start quilting until maybe her early 30s or late 20s, but really, you know, spent a lifetime, you know, the daughter of a world-famous quilter, and really wasn't that interested. That's just how that story goes, I think, sometimes. So tell me these things about yourself. I want to know. We are pondering. Here's what I want to tell you. I don't want to take forever on this intro, but there are things I want to tell you. One, I went to a guild meeting on Monday, the Durham Orange Quilt Guild meeting. Skipped Bible study. I know. Yeah. And I wanted to go to the guild meeting. I haven't done it in the longest time. Partly for 2 years, I was doing Bible study. It was always on Monday night. And I was very good about going. And I felt, especially we had a really small group then. It was just 5 people. So if somebody didn't show, you were missed. Your contribution to the discussion was missed. So I felt very, responsible toward the group. And so I always went. And then last year I didn't do Bible study, but I don't know. I just wasn't, you know, I was, oh, I know. I was, you know, having my, you know, it was my Jubilee year. I wasn't doing anything. So I wasn't doing groups or meetings or what have you. So that was probably part of it. And, you know, I'm not really groupy. But I decided when I saw that the guild meeting, there was a presenter, Susan Brubaker Knapp. Or Knapp. I think she probably was just Knapp, but I like saying Knapp. You know, it's like Knopf. I read it Knopf books. Knopf. That's right. Anyway, she of Quilting Arts TV fame was a presenter, so I wanted to go. And also just, you know, I was kind of curious. I hadn't been in a while, and I wanted to see if I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it very much, and she was wonderful. Now, I think when I mention this in the actual Quilt Diaries, I talk about planning on going to the guild meeting, but I had not gone to the guild meeting when I did the Quilt Diaries. I think I said she was on PBS, but I don't think that's right. I think Quilting Arts TV is its own thing. I don't know. You can tell me. I'm not sure, but I think it's its own thing and not a PBS thing. But maybe it is a PBS thing. I have no idea. I don't know what I'm talking about. But she was good. She gave a great presentation. So her deal, her book, and I've seen it all over the place, is Point Click Quilt. Turn your photos into fabulous fabric art. For all I know, I have it. I don't think I do. But it looked good. And she lives outside of Charlotte, which I had no idea. She's very close. Good presenter. Very clear in her speaking. Just super likable without being... seeming like she needed us to like her all that much. She wasn't, you know, she just seemed like herself and seemed like a likable, smart, interesting person. She started out by going over actually how to take a picture and giving tips for taking better pictures, which I enjoyed because I take terrible pictures. She spent very briefly talked about elements of design. You know, I guess it's kind of cool that she did that, but as we know, that can take years of art school to comprehend, which is good that she spent like 1 minute. She just gave the list. Here are some elements of design. And then she discussed her process, and she showed us pictures of the process of making some of her quilts. So she makes these art quilts, and she does. So she takes a picture, and she showed a lot of her photographs just to give us when she was illustrating tips for taking pictures. And she takes really neat photographs. And what she does is she takes them digitally, she prints them out, and she traces them. And she says she can't draw, but her tracings are very nice. And then she takes the tracing to a copier, you know, a copy center, and gets enlarged proportionally. And that's her pattern. And then basically what she's doing is, well, if you've done applique, any kind of applique portraiture, like I'm thinking about my Christmas quilt from last year, where you are cutting out pieces, you are choosing fabrics and cutting out pieces and layering stuff. And what, you know, it's funny because I was taking notes as she was talking about her process, and I realized A, I've kind of done this, and B, if I were to get into this, I actually would probably just buy her book. But her quilts are beautiful. They're small. I was surprised because, of course, we're watching this presentation and her, PowerPoint is up on a huge screen. And the quilts themselves are maybe, I like 20 by 14, if that. I mean, some of them were tiny. What was neat, and it was so cool that she just walked us through the process. Okay, here's how this quilt was made. It started with this picture, da, 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 and showed the layering. And what was very cool is what really makes these quilts pop is her thread art. So she quilts stuff, but then she does all this stuff with thread. And she is an Orophil person, and now actually is, as she said, has a relationship with Orophil. But she would show the almost finished quilt, and then she would show the finished quilt with the quilting and the thread painting. And it's just amazing. And then she passed quilts around. And, I didn't love everyone. She also does some painting on them, does different things. I mean, she's incredibly creative. But some of them were just so beautiful. And the thread painting just made these quilts happen. So she was great. I'm really glad I went. And I enjoy, again, I'm not a group person. I sat in the back when they asked, "Do we have any guests?" I did not raise my hand. I did sign the guest book, and the president, whoever was leading the meeting, was looking around like, "I know somebody signed the guest book." She didn't say that, but I was not going to raise my hand. I just don't raise my hand. But it was fun. It was fun, and they talked about the Christmas party and the various things coming up, and this sounds like they're really trying to make some things happen. Apparently now, there's a social hour from 6:30 to 7, so a social half hour. And there's you can socialize, you can sit, there's a circle where someone teaches a particular skill. But now there's also they have a newcomer circle. So if you're fairly new to the guild, they want you to come and sit and say, "Here's what I'd love to see," which I think is great. And I think they're trying to listen to what people want, and especially what is helpful. If you've been going to some of these people, I don't know when the first time I went to a Durham Orange Quilt Guild meeting was. It may have been 6 years ago, but it's the same people, and I see them when I go to the biannual show. There's a core group of people I've been seeing for many years, but and you forget if you've been in a group for many years that newcomers don't necessarily understand the lay of the land or why you do certain things or why you don't do certain things. So I thought that was interesting. It made me want to join again and maybe just decide, yeah, third Monday of the month, that's what I'm gonna do. I don't feel, because the Bible study I'm in right now has 10 people. It's like people miss all the time. It's a really slack group. But it makes me feel a little like, okay, I can be slack too. But I mean, I feel like there's always going to be at least five people or six people there. So if I want to do that, I think I'll wait till January to join since I don't want to go to the Christmas party. Because I'm the Grinch. No, because you know me. I don't want to do that. So that was fun. I will put a link. I'm so linky. Put the link to Susan Brubaker Knapp's or Knapp's website, which is quite nice, on the show notes, in the show notes. And she is doing a retreat with Lyric Kennard, who also lives in this area, up in Black Mountain, North Carolina, and next year from October 1 through 3, one, first through the third. And I suspect I will not do that, but. Lyric Kennard is a great quilting artist too. So, and Black Mountain is fabulous. I love Black Mountain. When the man and I lived in East Tennessee when we were first married, we lived in the mountains, really close to the North Carolina border. See, borders, borderlines. There we go, making it work. And our house did not have air conditioning, and for the most part, it really didn't need it. It did not get that hot in the summer. You could do with fans. But every once in a while, you'd get a little bit of a heat wave, and we would drive over to Black Mountain, which is outside of Asheville, about an hour or so from where we lived, and get just check into the Days Inn and walk around Black Mountain, and it was very cool. So, if you're thinking I'd like to do a little art quilting with Susan Brubaker Knapp and Lyric Kennard, I would think that this would be pretty cool. Oh, that reminds me, Carol on Twitter was taking a class this week with Sherry Lynn Wood. Not about passage quilts. It looked like some sort of intuitive quilting was going on. The pictures that she showed on Twitter, or at least the picture that I saw, looked like very cool things were happening there. But wasn't that cool? I mean, the universe, it's just in sync sometimes. We are in sync. Carol and I are in sync. Carol and Sherry Lynn and I, we are in sync. I thought that was so cool. All right. Is there anything else I want to tell you? Well, let's talk about what is on the show notes for you to go look at. Or at least anything I don't mention in the quilt diaries. Let's see. I have pictures for you to look at. And soon we'll have a picture of the mosaic quilt. So that's big. Let's see. Mostly stuff I am seeing that I do talk about. I am enjoying a new book podcast. I know that Barbara mentioned it to me in an email. And then I heard someone else. And it was either Pam or Tanisha. And I'm kind of thinking Pam mentioned it on their podcast, which is called Books on the Nightstand. And I'm really enjoying that a lot. So if you're looking for a book podcast, try that. And I also link to an article from the Wall Street Journal from maybe last year about a bookish podcast. So there's that. And I think everything else that I link to, I actually mention in the Quilt Diaries. So we are good with that. Let me say thank you to everyone who commented. And people were very nice and said congratulations on 150. Oh, yeah, that's 150. And I know other people have surpassed me, Pam. But other people are a little more consistent than I am. Other people are engineers. They're good. They are. They show up when they're supposed to and do the math. And then there's me. Okay. So thank you to Terry, Kristen, and Michelle. Thanks to Jane, who says she appreciates the show notes because now she doesn't have to run and get a piece of paper and a pencil to write this stuff down. Thank you to Tammy, to Loretta Six, who has gotten hooked on the Archers. Oh, Loretta, we have stuff to talk about. Yes, it's crazy. It's crazy right now on the Archers, and I am very hooked. To heard from AJ Dub, who let me know that there was something wrong with the last episode when she and Quilt and Jenny said she had the same problem when she downloaded it. She had total silence for a few minutes, and then it was funky. And I don't know what that was, because when I played it on my iTunes, it was fine. So I don't know. But something was going on, so I reloaded it again, and then it worked. So thanks for letting me know, AJ Dub. Thanks from Quilt and Jenny for her comments. And by the way, she said this was perfect. So I was talking about the Bible study, and that there's always one person in a group that if that person weren't there, it would be a perfect group. And she wrote, if there's not someone in the group who drives you nuts, you are that person. And that is so true. And I can actually think of a couple groups where actually I was that person. You know, so, I'm not entirely nuts, but I think sometimes you're just in the wrong group. And so everyone else, you know, it's like me, if you threw me in with, you know, the cheerleaders or something, yeah, I would be that person. Laura commented on chicken pastry. Now, her husband's grandma called it chicken pie, but cut out. So it was like she made pie crust, cut it like lasagna noodles, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, so that's just a little bit more complication into the chicken pastry mystery, which I'm still working on. I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of chicken pastry. Heard from Terry again, and I think I mentioned this somewhere in the quilt diary, but she did, just in case I didn't, and I think it's worth mentioning twice. Terry did volunteer to replace me as a judge for speech and debate meets. And Terry, we are going to work this out, huh? We're going to get you here. Maybe we'll get you here for a couple weeks just to, you know, so you can do a couple weekends. But she had a son who was in Lincoln Douglas debate, which is what Jack does, and many other things. She judged at all levels of high school forensics and loved everything about it. Oh, Terry, I love you. You are the nicest person on the face of the earth. Even that, you are enthusiastic about. Oh, you're so good. Heard from Tori and got caught up. So I was so happy. I miss Tori. I miss Tori because now she doesn't have anyone in Durham to come see or in this area to come see, but I'm really hoping her son Eric's going to go to state, Eric, so your mom can come talk to me again and heard from Marianne. And she said she's never heard of chicken pastry before, but it sounds like someone was trying to make a classier name for chicken and dumplings, which is possible. I had not thought of that. And it makes sense in a way because chicken and pastry, I mean, it's a special meal. You know, it's like a Sunday night dinner meal. And so to up it, to want to make it even more special, makes sense. So thanks for that. Okay, I think that is everything I have to say right now. If I think of more stuff to say, I'll just start next week's episode. So thank you, everyone for commenting. I've been getting lots of comments. I think it helps to be podcasting regularly again. You trust me again. You trust me not to leave you. That's what it, I don't know if any of you, I know some of you are knitters, and you may have listened to Brenda Dane's A Cast On, which was for a long time while she was podcasting regularly, was my favorite knitting podcast. And she's just finally posted her last episode. She's done it for 9 years, and I haven't listened to the whole episode, so not quite, I don't have the nuts and bolts of why she's stopping, other than I think she's just, her life has changed, and it's time to move on to other things. But I'm not stopping, even if I break. My mom, who has been so good, because when I started podcasting, I told her about it. I said, but the only reason I'm trusting you that if for some reason I go a couple weeks or any length of time without podcasting, that you are not going to call me up and say, "Where's the podcast?" My mom doesn't talk like that at all. "Where's the podcast, honey?" she would say. And she promised. And she has been so good. I've been doing this for 4 years, 4.5 years. My mom has not once called and, even when there were long stretches. I've had some long stretches. She never. And I'm talking to her on the phone Monday. Monday, it's not even been a week, not even close to a week since I posted my last episode. And she's like, "So, I'm all caught up. When are you posting a new one? I know I'm not supposed to do that." I'm like, "Mom." She's like, "Oh, I know. I know. I just want to hear what's going on." As we're talking on the phone and I'm telling her what's going on. My mom, as you know, is very lovely. I was thinking when she comes for Christmas, maybe we'll do an interview because that's always fun. It's good to hear from my mom. But anyway, I just thought that was hilarious that the one time in 4.5 years that my mom has broken her pledge, it had only been a few days since my last posted episode. Yes. Oh, mom, you're funny. You're swell. All right, guys, that's enough. Let's go on to the Quilt Diaries. Quilt Diary Day One. It's Saturday, November 15th, 2014. It's about 8:30, quarter to nine. Beautiful morning, cold. I know some people are getting snow. I think Terry in Colorado got snow this week. We actually had snow flurries yesterday. I looked in the paper, average temperature this time of year, 64, and yesterday it was about 50. It's actually beautiful. I don't, me, I don't complain about the weather. Period. I don't mind a little chill in the air in the fall. What I mind mostly, if I minded weather, if I even noticed it, is just sort of cold, dreary, rainy, drizzly kind of days. They kind of take it out of me. I keep forgetting I need to get out my sad lamp and get in the habit of sitting in front of that again. I feel fine. I'm not feeling any sort of winter blues, but you have to build up your rays. So I've said this before, I'll say it again. If you suffer from any kind of winter blues, a kind of mild but chronic winter depression, get a sad lamp, a seasonal affective disorder lamp, and sit in front of it between 20 and 30 minutes every morning. It will change your life. Just saying. Anyway, I'm sitting here on the couch with Travis, who's snoozing right beside me, tucked up into the side of me. That sounded a little weird. Let's just go with right beside me. And the man went back to bed after taking Jack to the debate bus this morning. It was a rather late start time for a travel debate day. Jack did not have to be at the bus until 7. There have been times where he needed to be there at 5:30 or 6. So today felt like a little vacation. Anyway, the man does that, and he comes and he goes back to bed for a little bit at least, if he can get back to sleep. I think he has. Will is still asleep. Will has reached that age where he is sleeping in more and more, has not gotten to the 1 o'clock in the afternoon sleeping in, but it's not unusual for him to sleep in on the weekend till 10 or 11, at least on Saturday. Of course, Sunday, we make him go to Sunday school, so he has to get up, and he growls and complains, but he's fine. You should go to bed a little earlier if that's a problem, Will. Anyway, I'm sitting here with my dog by my side, not in my side, like a thorn, reading this book that I got. I think I got it earlier this week, called American Quilt Making 1970 to 2000. It's by Eleanor Levy, or Levy, I'm not sure, L-E-V-I-E, and it was published by the American Quilter Society in 2004. So I've just started it. I have flipped all the way through it, and now I've just started kind of seriously reading it to see what kind of history it can give me. One of the things that interested me and that I thought I would talk about, if I find more interesting things later, I will talk about them later, but I thought I'd go, it's best for me to talk about things when I'm thinking about them, because if I wait, well, I will forget everything that I thought was so interesting to talk about. But talking about the great quilt revival of the 1970s, the beginning of the boom, which to some extent is still going on today. It was interesting, I posted in my show notes a couple episodes ago a link to the most recent quilter survey, which is entitled Quilting in America 2014. It's the seventh in a series of studies. They've been doing these since 1994, and mostly it's looking at how much time quilters, dedicated quilters, spend quilting, how much money they spend. It's really a time and money thing, and they do kind of survey. They sent out, I think they said like 90,000, and once they got 7,500 responses, and they kind of closed the door. I guess that must be statistically enough, or enough to get a good statistical reading. I don't know. I don't know anything about statistics. Surprise. And some of the findings were that 10% of U.S. households have at least one active quilter. And then they talk about what is a dedicated quilter. And a dedicated quilter basically is how much money you spend. If you spend $500 or more a year on fabric and quilt-related stuff, which maybe includes, I don't know, like quilting events. I'm sure it includes rotary cutter blades. Really, you could spend $500 on rotary blades alone. They are so expensive. Anyway, so you got to spend $500 a year to be a dedicated quilter. Think I've got that covered. You probably do too, if you're the kind of quilter who listens to quilt podcasts. If you care that much about quilting to want to be that connected to a quilting community to listen to podcasts, as that would describe me, I bet it describes you, and I bet we both spend more than $500 a year on quilting. Enough said. Interesting, average age, 64. A little older than I am. And I wonder, well, I don't know a lot about how, again, statistics, about surveys, about who was surveyed. If younger quilters don't have $500 a year to spend on quilt making, and in fact may find different ways, more frugal ways of getting fabric and getting what they need to make quilts. Also, it's like for a dedicated quilter, they found 64 female household income around $100,000. That's going to shut out. I mean, that's not a criterion for being dedicated, but it suggests that to be able to spend $500 or more, and really what the dedicated quilter is spending was like $3,000 or more. So it's quite like you have to spend $500 to be dedicated, but on average you're spending $3,000, which is more than I'm spending. Anywho, younger quilters aren't going to be spending that kind of money. So that there may be more younger quilters than we know. I just go into the modern quilt stuff and the popularity of QuiltCon, which is coming up again in the spring. I can't remember where. I don't think it's back. I don't think it's back in Austin. I think it's somewhere else, but I could be wrong. Any event, what I'm going with here, I had a point. Oh, just that there was my point that looking at this, I realized that quilting 10 years ago was a 27. There were 27 million dedicated quilters, or 27, yeah. And now there's like 16 million. Now I may be getting that wrong. It may not be the dedicated quilters. They're essentially, no, it's not dedicated. Just people who make like one quilt a year, and identify themselves as quilters. Right now, this year it's 16.4. In 2004, it was 27 million. I don't know why the drop there, and I don't know why I got on talking about the drop. Oh, I guess just oh, that we're part of this boom that started in the 1970s is continuing. There hasn't been a bust, and there's some people feel that suggests that quilting is like, I don't know, love of NCAA basketball or leaf blowing or something. It's not going away. We're not going to see a precipitous decline. I don't know if that's true or not, but it is a pretty long run. If we're looking, say, 1976 to 2014, you do the math, it's a long time. Right? I mean, we're closing in on what, 40 years? That's a long boom. So we'll see. We'll see. But it's interesting that it does seem to be the trending down a little bit. But it's also interesting that the biggest number, 27 million, which that's the biggest number since they've been doing the survey, 2004. I wonder. I'm trying to think like when I bought that apron book. You know, I mean, I've been knitting a long time, but that's also seems to me kind of Stitch and Bitch kind of height of popularity. So suggesting that something was going on in the culture post 9/11 that peaked at that time. And so there were more quilters, there were more people being crafty and staying home by the fire, and that may have accounted for the big numbers. I can't tell you. I don't know. Not a pollster. Just interested. Just an interested bystander. Anyway, so I'm reading this book. So we're talking about bicentennial. Okay. Now I like this book. It's interesting to me so far, and I've learned many interesting things from it. But when the author talks about what accounted for this resurgence of an interest in quilting, she just talks about the bicentennial. She mentions, I think in historic notes, I haven't gotten there. She does mention at some point that Whitney show with the abstraction and quilts show that was like 1971 that really got people excited about quilts too. But what she doesn't mention, at least in this sort of introductory chapter about the resurgence of quilts, is the feminist movement, which I think is, you know, I wonder why. Maybe I'll get to the history notes and that'll be big there. But all she talks about is the bicentennial. But in fact, the bicentennial is 76. We know that the interest in quilt making, and well, no, and I think leading up to the bicentennial. I mean, I think that we were leading up to the bicentennial for, you know, probably starting in 72 or 73. People were starting to think about it. But yeah, she doesn't talk about, well, this resurgence in interest in women's work, feminist scholars saying, hey, quilts are worth study. They can be studied as objects of art, as this big famous Whitney exhibit proved, because they were, in fact, common everyday quilts where everybody, they weren't art quilts, they were quilts that had been sitting in people's linen closets for how many years? Nobody knows. And suddenly there was this renewed interest, like, oh, quilts are interesting, quilts are valuable, quilts are worth looking at, they're worth valuing, they're worth studying. That was a huge part of the resurgence in quilt making. I mean, it also was sort of the back to the land movement and sort of the hippie movement, and where people were really reappreciating traditional crafts and traditional skills. So that was there too. And then she talks about, suddenly these quilters, what happened, and this is actually what spurred me to get out my recorder and start talking. What's interesting is there was this big gap. So after the 1930s, until the 1970s, there was a big gap. There was, 30 or 40 years where quilt making was really on the wane. Of course, there were people who always made quilts. It's not like it disappeared entirely. But as far as any kind of boom, any kind of craze, any kind of everybody's doing this, that was not happening with quilt making. For the reasons of World War II, women were going to work, the introduction of synthetic fabrics that really did not make for good quilts. Women were sewing, they were still sewing clothes, but there was so much more available ready-made. So it just was not a thing. So that there were a lot of women who came to quilt making in the 1970s who did not have a family tradition of quilt making. Maybe their grandmother had way back in the day, but it was fairly likely that their mothers had not been quilt makers. And it would be interesting to do a survey, say just of those of us listening, like how many of you became quilt makers and learned the craft from your mother. Now I know Sandy over at Quilting for the Rest of Us, who dedicates every episode to her mom, Shirley. Shirley was a quilt maker, very, very serious, committed quilt maker. In fact, I was listening to Sandy, I think her most recent podcast last night, and she talked about how when she was a kid, she was in the habit of, before she sat down, sort of brushing the chair or the couch to make sure there were no pins in it. And even when she would go to other people's houses, she just out of habit would brush the surface of the seat just to make sure she wasn't sitting down on a pin. So I know she comes from that quilting tradition. I'd be interested to know, Sandy, if you're listening, if you're not off flying to Burma as I speak. You're not. I know you're not yet. But in any event, be interested to know if your grandmother was a quilt maker. Now for me, my mom is a quilt maker now, but she really started making quilts maybe 5 or 6 years before I did. So mine was not a received tradition, and nor was my mom's, because I don't think her mother did really beautiful needlework, but I do not think she made quilts. I could be wrong. I'll ask her, or maybe she'll comment on this episode. But whether or not my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, made quilts, I don't think my mother was brought up making quilts at all. So my whole point on this is that there was this, when the boom started in the 70s, a lot of women came to it without a quilt making tradition in their family. In some ways, they were quilting pioneers. And that's an interesting way to look at this phase of quilt history. Is it's almost like we do look to the past, and of course what happened is that the women came to quilting. They picked up Family Circle magazine. I love this. There were all these popular women's magazines that started carrying quilting patterns and would have quilts on their covers. And so say some woman picked up Family Circle magazine at the grocery store, had a beautiful quilt on the cover, and she decided to teach herself how to make that and was on her own because her mother had not made quilts. So these are sort of the grandmothers of quilting today, these women who decided to make quilts, got into it in the 1970s. The other thing that the author talks about in this chapter is then, because these women, they start on their own, but as quilters tend to do, as much as any group of craftspeople I know, they want to gather and talk about what they're doing because they love it so much. And so at this time, you started seeing a growth in quilting circles, quilting bees, and quilt guilds became really big. Okay, let's pause. I'm doing you a favor right now, and that is I'm chopping out a huge block of stuff that I said on Saturday. It was interesting to me, but listening to it as I'm doing now on Monday, I don't think it's that interesting. I don't think you would find it that interesting. So I cut it. So this will seem like a little abrupt shift because we're going from the end of what may or may not have been interesting to you, cutting out a big block of talk that I think would not have been interesting to you, going into stuff that may or may again not be interesting to you, but at least is not more quilt history. I will say I have listened to what comes next. I want to make a tiny correction. I talk about anticipating meeting Debbie, who came into town this past weekend. I say that she was coming to North Carolina because her daughter lived up in the mountains, but that's not correct. Her daughter had visited the mountains of North Carolina at some point and just had raved about it so much that Debbie knew that one day she would need to come. Okay, on to part B of Saturday morning's quilt diary. It is a Saturday. I have a couple things today. Supposedly, I have on my calendar that I'm Skyping with this library that I actually did a visit to earlier this year, and they're having some big, I think it's that November writing thing. I can't remember what it's called, where you're supposed to write a book, write a novel during the month of November. And I think they're having an event where they're having workshops and various things. And so I'm going to Skype for an hour. Supposedly it's on my calendar. I actually have not heard from the librarian in quite a while. So I'm like, is this still happening? I will take a shower just in case it is, but talk about how to get published as a children's book author or a YA author. And then at 4, I'm meeting with Debbie, who is a listener from California, who is in North Carolina. I believe her daughter lives up in the mountains. And they came here during the coldest week of the fall so far and have planned to go out to the Outer Banks. So I've always, you know, my dream is to one day have Thanksgiving at Ocracoke. Because I love it so much. And I've never been out there in the late fall. And a friend of mine's family, that's actually what they do. They rent a house, and house rentals out there this time of year are really cheap, and gather the tribes. And I would love to do that. So I'm looking forward to meeting Debbie in person and also hearing about Ocracoke in November. Although my guess is Ocracoke this November, a little chilly. So I'm about to finish this up and then go do some work in my kitchen, because I have a cleaning cooking calendar for the next 6 weeks, and today's job is cleaning out my freezer and my deep freeze, because you know what I'm doing on Monday? I am making round one of Christmas cookies. I don't really like making Christmas cookies. It's just I don't know. I'm so lazy. I should just buy them. Except that homemade Christmas cookies taste so good. I make a nice sugar cookie. And anyway, so that is what I'm going to do Monday, round one of Christmas cookies. So I need my deep freeze with lots of room to put in the cookies. So that's my job today, is I'm going to clean out the deep freeze, which shouldn't be too bad because I cleaned it out a few months ago. No, the deep freeze will be bad. The regular freezer should be okay. And then also I want to clean out the Lazy Susan. Again, did it sometime in the not too distant past. So, you know, if you actually keep up with this stuff, I've learned it's easier. Yeah. And I have some things in this house. We've lived here 7.5 years that I really haven't done in 7.5 years because I am lazy. My hope is that at some point between Skyping and visiting and cleaning that I will finish my half-square triangles. I'm almost there. My half-square triangle border for the mosaic quilt, which I've been trying to finish now for weeks, it seems like. But I'm almost there. I've got them all ready to go. I just got to sew them together and then sew them on. Oh, you know what I didn't do last week? I'll try to remember to do this. I forgot to even talk about it, or if I talked about it, it got lost in the missing quilt diary of 2014. What I realized is that when you attach these half square triangle borders, you have to deal with the corners, because of course, I'm sure wiser women then I would have figured out how to make it work exactly so that everything matched up and it just was a unending round of half square triangles going in a pattern. But that didn't work for me. And so it's like every length of border, of half square triangle border, needs a leader and an ender where it's just a white square. Do you know what I mean? So that the corners are essentially white squares, except they're not really squares. They're more like what's, if you had a square, but it wasn't a square because one of the angles was like 110 degrees, that's what it's like. Not a square. What is this? Is that a rhombus? I don't know. Whatever it is, not quite a square, but I realized that. I thought I would just like, oh, I'll just let the strips run into each other and let the half square triangles run into each other at the corners, and that would look fine and kind of funky. It just looked really stupid. So I don't think I've done a good job of explaining what I did. I'll show you a picture, and I did take a picture of how it looked when before I realized I needed to have the white fabric leaders and enders on the borders. I took a picture. I'll try to remember to post that. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's it for now. More soon. Quilt Diary Day 2. It's Monday. I believe it's the 17th. And it's a blustery, rainy day today. It's very nice. I don't complain. And I've been working on various things this morning, including making Christmas cookies, because I want to get that puppy out of the way. Yeah, working on it. I'll let you know. This is my great experiment. Can I actually do the things I plan to do that I have written down on a calendar? Two calendar pages printed out from the internet. Got all kinds of good stuff. And today, Christmas cookies, round one. First, I want to tell you about meeting my new best friend, Debbie. Debbie is a listener in California, never commented, decided it was time, so she flew to North Carolina. That's class. That's doing things big. No, actually, Debbie, who has never commented, but promises she will comment from now on, and I believe you, Debbie, don't let me down. She and her husband, Bob, who live in California, came to North Carolina for a vacation. People fly across the country to my state to vacation here because it's really nice. And they spent part of their time in western North Carolina, up in the mountains, and then part of their time on the Outer Banks in Ocracoke. Yes, because Debbie's been listening to this podcast since Simply Amy, Simply Francis, which we know is a long, long time ago. And she loved Ocracoke. Bob, who's more of an action guy, I think found it a little subdued for his taste. And I can imagine that Ocracoke is very subdued this time of year, but I still want to go. I don't know. I don't really imagine that we will leave Durham unless something really big were to happen. The man was, ran for president and won, and we would move up to DC for a few years. But other than that, I really do think we will stay here. But if we were to retire somewhere, Ocracoke would be pretty high on my list. I really like Charlottesville, Virginia. That would be another place. But I really like Durham, and it's fun for me to actually have roots someplace, so I don't have any plans on leaving. But anyway, so Bob and Debbie come from California, go to the mountains, go to the coast, and then Durham, which is very central. And I never asked. I'm assuming they stayed here because they flew in here and to Raleigh Durham, to that airport. So anyway, so we got together on Saturday. We got together at a little bar and grill that was inside the Hilton, which was not where they were staying, but was right across the parking lot from where Bob and Debbie were staying. So that was great. And I got there, and Bob was there with Debbie, I think making sure that I was, in fact, a podcaster and not a mass murderer. And we, after introductions, he went on his merry way. And Debbie and I sat down and talked for 2 hours about everything, but of course started with quilting. She made me and brought me two fabulous pot holders. I have pictures. I will put them on the website. I have yet to use them. I don't know if I will ever bring myself to use them. I know that they were made to be used. Debbie insisted I use them, but they're very pretty. It's going to take me a while. She also showed me a book. This is such a good idea, and it's kind of inspired me to take better pictures of my quilts or to ask the man to do little some artsier shots of my quilts. He documents them for me, but that mostly consists of hanging them up and taking pictures, but no like home decorating magazine type displays of quilts. But Debbie has beautiful quilts. She's into the back of quilts like I am. I've talked about this recently, you know, how I love a funky quilt back. But her quilts, they're wonderful, mostly modern, not all, but mostly, and just really pretty. And she has great pictures of them. I think Bob took some. And she downloaded the pictures and made a book. You know, and I think we're probably all familiar with that. We did that this summer. My sister-in-law actually did it, gathered the photographs from our family reunion in early August and made a book that she was so kind, not only sent to my mom for the birthday present, but also sent copies to me and my other brother as well. Anyway, it's a neat thing. And I would love to do this. It's such a great way. You know, I've been talking about doing a better job of documenting quilts. And, you know, and so she has pictures of her quilts, but also writes about them, which is really neat. So, but I think it helps to have good quilt pictures, which she does, and I don't. But maybe I'll change that because I like books. I thought that was a neat book. Anyway, Debbie and I had a great time. It was so good to meet her. If you're coming through town, let me know. I have had such good luck with quilty people. I've yet to meet one that I'm not like. Now I'm going to go to the guild meeting tonight. I'm skipping Bible study. There was some chance that we weren't going to have Bible study. So, and once I saw that, oh, you know, it's the third Monday. And there is, let me tell you who the speaker is. Oh, it's Susan Brubaker Knapp, or Knapp. Bet it's Knapp. But I think she does, sort of, she's an art quilter, does the Quilting Arts PBS show. I believe that's who she is. I'd like to see that. I'm also, you know, I'm getting kind of folklore-y, folkway-y with the quilting. I've been sort of thinking about a folklorist. I'm not a folklorist. I'm not even trained or even know really much about it. But, you know, I've been a volunteer for 3 years. So, hey. No, but trying to think about, you know, and sort of getting interested in quilt history, of course. I may have just talked about this. For you, it may have been 5 minutes ago. For me, it's like several days now. But, yeah, kind of, so I think I did. I think I talked about this. Oh, dear. Maybe I'll just splice this part out. I don't know. I'll try to remember to do that. Anyway, so I don't know. I'm going to give it another try. I'm not a group person, but I am being interested in the folk ways of quilters. It's a good way to do research. Anyway, so I'm doing that tonight. Skipping out on the crazy guy in Bible study. Yeah. What did I want to tell you? Oh, so making Christmas cookies this morning, while I was doing that, I was watching a documentary I just bought called The Great Quilt Revival. And I got it, it's The Great American Quilt Revival, over, and I will put a link up, but over on Zimeo. If you're familiar with Zimeo, it's a video site. I think it's mostly documentaries. A lot of the stuff is free. I discovered it through the Southern Foodways Alliance because they do some documentaries, and that's where they're posted. And The Great American Quilt Revival, I've watched about half. Now, it comes in at a total of an hour and 42 minutes. An hour of that is a documentary, and the rest of it is it's an interview with Georgia Bowensteel. There are other interviews, extras, da-da-da-da. I bought it because you could rent it for 3 days for $3, or you could buy it. Whole thing for $8, and knowing me, I would rent it and then suddenly not have time to watch it. So one, and then I'd have to rent it again. It also strikes me something I would watch more than once. It is so interesting, and you know me, Miss 1970s quilt history person at this point, And it's really, so some of the people who are interviewed are people like Jonathan Holstein, who I've been talking about, who did the, who curated the abstract design and American quilt show at the Whitney that was so important in 1971. Of course, Georgia Bonesteel's in it, Jenny Byers, Barbara Brackman, Questa Benberry, all these folks. So it's fascinating. Let me read you this. In the Great American Quilt Revival, a cast of today's well-known quilters, including the notable Georgia Bonesteel, plus historians and collectors, discuss their art and role in the revolution of modern quilting, tracking early quilting innovator Marie Webster onto the influence of Amish and African-American traditions, and finally to the outpouring of quilts in the response to the 9/11 tragedies. The Great American Quilt Revival captures the story of this landmark movement. I'm finding it really, really interesting. Just well done. What the people they interview, what they're talking about is interesting. And there's great visuals. And that one of the things that I loved is seeing the pictures from the Whitney 1971 show, which you can also see over at the International Quilt Study Center site, because they have Jonathan Holstein's quilts, his collection. They house that now along with his papers. But here you see really like big shots, like, you know, full shots of people in the museum looking at the quilts. And it's fascinating because we don't think anything of seeing quilts on a wall. You know, you go to your local guild show, you go, you know, to Paducah, you know, the biggest shows, Paducah and Houston, whatever, quilts are hung on the wall all over the place. Most of us probably have quilts hanging on our walls at home. I know I do. You know, not a biggie, not a thing. But before that show, who thought to do that? Nobody, because people were not thinking about quilts as art, except for, of course, the people who made them. So fascinating stuff. I also watched yesterday one of the early vidcasts from International Quilt Study Center is Jonathan Holstein, and I would recommend that if you have interest in quilt history and quilting in general, old quilts, whatever it is. He's an interesting guy. He is one of the founders of the Quilt Study Center, and he's an interesting guy. It's interesting to hear how he and his partner, Gail, I don't know her last name, you know, they were just kind of, they were art collectors. They were part of the art world in New York in the 60s and 70s. And they would go on the weekends in their VW van around to antique festivals and, you know, and galleries and things just to see what was out there. And that's how they started collecting quilts. And they just got very interested in quilts that really were not getting a lot of notice. You know, there were still some quilts that would sort of assume pride of place in somebody's house. But these, they got interested in the old patchwork quilts that they were finding. And he talks about, like, the first Amish quilt he saw. He'd never seen anything like it. It was modern art. And, you know, it was hard to get a hold of them because the Amish didn't sell their quilts. But anyway, so interesting stuff. I will have links to the Vimeo site, or if you want to rent or buy pretty cheaply the Great American Quilt Revival, you can. These are just the things that are interesting me right now. Obviously, almost done making my border. In fact, I think a half square triangle border, so close. I worked on it for a while yesterday. I'm going to finish it today and then get started on putting the outside border on and then quilting. I gotta get some Leah Day refresher stuff going on. So I also, it was funny that Debbie brought potholders, because that's actually on my list. My potholders right now are very, very dingy, and I do want to make some new ones, and I probably still will, because I don't know how long it's going to take me before I can actually use the beautiful ones that Debbie brought. And Debbie was very helpful. She reminded me of what the brand name is for the insulated batting you need for potholders. I believe it's Insulbrite. And also, oh, here's an interesting thing, and I'll probably end here because I talked for a long time the other morning, and I don't want this to be too long of a podcast episode. She machine quilts, and she has a machine called a Juki, which you may have heard of. I'll link, J-U-K-I. And it's basically, it is sort of an industrial quilting machine. But it just does straight stitch. Apparently does it really, really fast. You oil it every time you use it. You don't have to take it in to be maintained. It is a workhorse of a machine. And she got it because she was quilting so much she was burning out. She was either burned out a sewing machine or was afraid she was going to burn out her sewing machine. I can't remember now. And I think, and reading reviews of the Juki machine, let me check. The one she has is the 2010 Q. And I can't remember. I had to pause. Where was I? That's the machine she has. She got it because she needed to save wear and tear on her other machine. The reviews that I've read say the same thing, that for people, they get it, it's as a second machine for machine quilting. It has a very wide throat, so it's a bigger, longer machine. But we both talked about how we doubt we will get long arm machines just because the space, and it's, you know, it's just a huge amount of money. And obviously, if you are a long armor, you know, and you're doing that for a living or to, you know, you can pay for your machine eventually, but I don't want to do that professionally. I can barely bring it, you know, I can barely bear what I'm, I guess, obviously, if you get a long arm machine, you're going to know what you're doing or learn what you're doing, but that's not what I want. But I would like to have a bigger throat and just, you know, a machine that was a little more conducive to machine quilting. Now the Juki costs $1,000 or $999. I give you that dollar break, which, you know, it would still be a big expense, but it's the kind of thing that, you know, if I did a couple school visits, you know, I mean, I could kind of get some work together that to pay for it. So I'm excited about that option. It is something that's definitely on my list of things to think about. So I think that's okay. So I do think that's it. Now I'm trying to remember what I said the other day, because there are things I'm thinking about, you know, sort of this and that, but I may have already talked about it. That was a long time ago. It was 2 days ago in the morning, and now it's 2 days later in the afternoon, so who knows? Who knows? All right, I'm going to end here, even though it's just Monday, because, I think an hour is a good length of time for an episode, so I don't want to go over that by too much. So we're going to end here and say have a good quilting week, whatever week this is that you're listening. And remember, life is short. Quilt first. Bye.